Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a wonderful time convalescing, but I'm doing a lot better. Thank you. It's great to be back.
So great to have you back, Larry.
Well, thank you, Karen.
We missed you.
Well, hey, I miss being here.
Well, what we're trying to do, ladies and gentlemen, we're trying to get involved in our simulcast here. So we're on our Blog Talk Radio portion, and we're getting into our blab.im. which is a new video/streaming platform that we were able to find that's really kind of cool. So we're trying to get into that now. So while we're doing that, Larry, you suggested this particular show regarding searching for Sugar Man. Why don't you kind of give us kind of an overview as to why you thought this was a good documentary? And what is it about this film that really intrigues you?
Well, let me tell you, both IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes rate this movie very, very high. It's rare when you get a documentary, and this is a documentary produced in 2012 about a singer-songwriter from the early 1970s, who was very much in the folk scene, but not really, a little off to the side of it. And all the people in the music industry loved him. All his small audience he played for loved him. And he did a couple of albums and then disappeared.
Wow.
And this film is about some people who adopted his music as one of the voices of their movement, and that is the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa nearly a generation later.
Wow.
After apartheid falls, some of the people involved in this music in South Africa want to find this man, searching for Sugar Man, which the Sugar Man is one of this musician's title of one of his songs. The name of the musician is Rodriguez, and this film follows their efforts, these two South Africaners, to find this guy. And all the misdirections they went through until they found him. This movie is one of the best films I've ever seen, whether it's a documentary or not. Sometimes I cry in movies because it really, you know, finds that spot in me. This one found that spot in me. At the end of this movie, I was just like, wow, it's an incredibly good film.
You know what's funny? I remember when you first talked to me about the film, and I was thinking, because I'm not a humongous documentary person, but you know, every once in a while there's a good documentary out there, and you hear about it, there's a little hype that goes along with it. So the only hype I really got about this film was you talking to me about the film. And you know what? I watched it twice. I really like this film. And it's funny because there's a certain point in the film where I get a little teary-eyed, and I found out when I watched it again, I got to that point again and got teary-eyed again. I mean, it's a really, really well-done documentary. And I love the two guys that are the primary investigators, I'll say, in this film, searching for Sugar Man. And it's just so ironic that they live in the same country, have the same similar thought, more or less, and are searching for the same party simultaneously and separately. And I thought that was kind of cool. And the fact that they were able to, you know, utilize whatever resources and try to find different resources, I should say, to try to, if nothing else, find out information about this particular singer-songwriter. And, you know, there's a TV series on VH1 called Unsung, and this guy would fit right in there.
He would.
Yeah, perfectly.
Now this film won the Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature Length in 2013. Also won the BAFTA Awards in 2013. Also won best in all of these different award things. It was incredible. Directors Guild of America, Outstanding Directorial Achievement in a Documentary. They won that. All of these different film festivals. If I remember correctly, it won 43 different awards with an additional 26 nominations.
Wow.
So, we're talking a film that you see only once in a great, great while. Part of the charm of this film is that the filmmakers take us on a journey that these two South Africaners follow when they decide to find this guy. And in doing so, they started by following the money, because they sent money to someone. They
Right.
sent money to someone to have the rights to his music, and they were making payments. And eventually, they find a guy in California who had been taking the checks, but nobody knew where Rodriguez was. And that is another story, because they don't really go into that part of the story that much. If you do some searching on the internet, you find that there were some lawsuits with this one gentleman, after this film was made, but what was interesting was they eventually found, totally by accident, one of Rodriguez's daughters. And then things start happening, and we finally get to see what happened to Rodriguez. The music he wrote and performs is so haunting and so incredible. And the funny thing about it was, there were only a few of his albums sold in the United States in the early 70s, and I actually heard one. I actually saw one. I had a friend who was really into folk music, really into,
wow.
Pardon me?
I said, wow, did you really?
Oh, yeah. At first in watching the movie, it was like, you know, I kind of remember that song. But it wasn't until they started showing the pictures of his album covers. And I had a friend who was a real Bob Dylan fan and a real fan of of this protest folk music. And lo and behold, then I remembered, yes, this guy had that album and he played it for us. And so part of my enjoyment of this film was the reconnection to that memory, which was great.
Indeed. So, Karen,
yes.
Did you get a chance to watch this film, and what's your opinion about it?
I did get a chance to watch it. I wish I'd seen it last year before, because I had the opportunity to go to Cape Town in South Africa, and I wish I'd seen the movie before I'd gone there, because I would have tried to go to the record store that was part of this film. I thought it was an amazing film, too. I agree with you and Larry about it. I don't really like documentaries very much. This was just a stunning documentary, and I thought it was so artistically crafted too. As far as documentaries go, maybe part of the problem for me is that they're too. Sometimes documentaries are just. Even if they deal with interesting subjects, they don't necessarily capture my interest. Maybe because of the filming style, but this one brought together a number of different disciplines. The man who's now deceased, who directed this film, contributed to the soundtrack. He did additional music for the soundtrack. There are these really gorgeous drawings that were actually done on oven paper. And the director, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, it's like Ben LaJewel or something like that. He's Swedish. But he did these drawings because he wanted to do 3D renderings, but he literally did not have enough money to get the 3D renderings done. So he did sort of storyboarding on oven paper. Well, the oven paper drawings are amazing, and that's what made it into the film. And they're gorgeous. I mean, far more gorgeous than probably the 3D renderings, if he had the money, would have been. They would have just been more commercial. This was just charming, and there was just also some interplay of some animation that just seamlessly blended into the actual filming of particular locations that I thought was just beautiful. And the way in which people are interviewed, they are very forthcoming. And I think that has to do a lot with the director and the people who worked with him on how they approach this. There's just such love and respect for this man and for what he's done. And I guess the other thing that's really striking to me is the passion that this director brought to the subject matter. He literally poured his heart and soul into getting this movie made. He spent 5 years of his life getting this movie made just on the chance, just because of a chance conversation that he happened to have about this mysterious man who charmed a whole nation at a very critical point. And there are all these stories surrounding Sugar Man, too, that he committed suicide on stage. He set himself on fire. He shot himself in the head, because he just disappeared, and none of that was true.
Well, one of the things that lends to that part of the story is his style of performing live in small venues. He would perform with his back to the audience. And so it was really about his music and never about him. And so when we hear the part of the story where they're picking up these different stories about he killed himself, oh, he killed himself in front of the audience, oh, he shot himself in the head in front of an audience, so on and so forth, it gets back to this dark personality that the filmmakers tell us in their story of their search for him. And I think that Karen, one of the things that you said was alluded to was that the filmmakers did a great job in telling us a story. they didn't just throw facts at us. They really gave us this story where by the end we're really caring for this guy. We're caring about him, his music, and we have drawn a line of empathy, you know, directly to him, and it makes us want to know more about him.
Right. And the other thing that was just stunning to me too, I mean, to me he almost reminds me, there's this movie called The Song of Bernadette where Jennifer Jones plays the woman who becomes Saint Bernadette. She develops these terrible diseases, and there's the spring of the spring at Lourdes that heals people. And in the movie, this nun says, you know, oh my goodness, you have all these terrible maladies. We should take you to the spring so that you can be cured. And she says, the spring is not for me. It's for everyone else. And this man, he went back to South Africa 30 times and did sold-out concerts. When he first went back in 1998, he did 6 concerts, sold-out venues, 5,000 people per concert, completely and utterly sold out, people absolutely raving over him. And it would seem like he could have made millions just doing South African concerts. It never happened because he gave away all the money to his family and his friends and
who
else, but he sure as heck didn't put it in his pocket.
Well,
still living in the same house that he's lived in for the past 40 years.
He does not
live a luxurious life by any stretch of the imagination.
No, he lives in a small one-room tenement building that has a small little furnace that, you know, or a small little heater that's hand operated to keep him warm in the wintertime. He's a very humble person, which is just amazing. There are a lot of misdirections, and not in the film, but in other research, if you want to do it, about this guy. There's a lot of misdirections and a lot of false information and a lot of good information, just being able to separate the wheat from the chaff. From what I understand, there once he was starting to make some money, there was big lawsuits as to who actually owned the songs, who actually owned the rights to his image, who, you know, and all of that stuff started happening. But then again, I can't get any real good information on this right now. So as I do more research on this in a future show, I might be able to, you know, give you some more information. But we do know that there was an estate set up. His daughter manages the estate. And so a big part of that money goes to his family, and it goes to Sammy through his estate. And
I mean,
then
like
what
a trust. I mean, estate would mean he's passed away. He's still here.
Well, right. Right, a trust, or it could just be his own corporation, you know, whatever that is. So, but you're right about an estate thing, but the real you know, hard hitting stuff about this film, again, is this great story about this wonderful man, and then the haunting music throughout the whole thing. And when you start really listening to the words of this music, you realize what he's really singing about. Because what was happening in Detroit back in the early 70s, you know, and what was going on in this country in the early 70s, and he was singing about that stuff. And then it makes sense as to why the South African anti-apartheid people adopted this stuff. The music is simply haunting.
Yeah, it really is. The music's absolutely gorgeous. I was blown away by how beautiful the music is, and his voice just conveys the music so beautifully, and it's like it just flows out of him. It just seems to just come out of him. It's like this gift that just goes out, and That's literally that's it in a nutshell. It's this gift. Here's the gift. It's an amazing gift, but not because I'm calling it amazing. And in fact, somebody even said to him, "Well, you know, you're a superstar in South Africa. How does that feel?" And he's like, "I don't know what you mean. I don't even know what to do with that question." You know, he didn't think of himself. Still doesn't think of himself as any sort of superstar. When somebody said, "Well, you know, your first album, that was an amazing album. How do you think you did?" And it took him a little while to finally admit that he thought he did okay, that he did pretty good. It's like, no, this album is transporting. You know, it's amazing, absolutely, totally amazing.
it's just a wonderful film, and when you go back from where these guys come from as far as in South Africa and their thoughts about this particular artist and the things that they went through to try to find him, it's amazing stuff. Going through the lyrics of the songs, going through what's written on the back cover of the album, and again, we're talking about albums here. We're talking about vinyl. And then redone on CD, which prompted even more research by these guys. And the one guy taking up what's written in the notes on the back of the CD or inside the CD, and taking up the crusade of, yes, be an investigator, investigate this thing. And, you know, doing that, the one guy who was a reporter, taking it that step further because of what he read in the CD cover. I mean, inside the CD cover. I mean, that's some great stuff. And we wonder about how people investigate all kind of things, and it just seems like the sky's the limit. There's so many things out there that can be considered as resources to try to find, and in this case, this wonderful, very talented person.
But now, it also seemed like kind of a serendipitous confluence of events too, Greg, because I mean the internet was extremely young when this journey began, and you could put out a missive like that and get genuine responses. These days, I don't know how you'd separate out the genuine responses from all the trolls that would just muck things up just to muck things up. And then also the person that they were looking for was somebody who was reachable, and people hide behind so many layers these days, sometimes out of necessity, that I don't know that it would be that easy to reach out to somebody. But in those days, yeah, I mean, he was a modest man, you know, and somebody wanted to reach him, and when he heard the story, he's like, oh, okay, well, sure, I'll call. And he called, and that was a wonderful moment in the movie when one of the guys who was searching said, you know, well, I talked to his daughter, and I said, gee, I really wish I could talk to him. And that was the end of that conversation. Then at 1 o'clock in the morning, there was a phone call, and it was him. You know, and his wife was like, it's him. And it was just amazing. It was just so wonderful.
It is. You know, you picked a good movie, Larry. Let's just face it. This is a real. It just has so many different elements in it that make.
Well, I got to tell you, and he might be listening right now. But how I found this film was our friend who talked about Quentin Tarantino, Carlton, gave me a call and told me about this film and how he explained it to me. And he didn't tell me anything about who this Sugar Man guy was. He just said, so I'm thinking, you know, oh, it's about candy or something, you know. And I find it, and I read a little bit about it. I said, my God, I do want to see this. And it blew me away. It simply blew me away. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, when you see a film, or you don't, better yet, when you don't see a film because you don't know if you're going to like it or not, or if it's not your thing, you know something, you could be missing a great opportunity to see something that is going to change your point of view. And now there's a lot of crap out there, And you got to weed through that crap, you know, manually. You got to look, watch it too. But every once in a while, you come across something like this, and you're glad you did.
Very glad. I think it's one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. And I remember watching the 2012 Oscars when Searching for Sugar Man won for Best Documentary Feature. And I remember the director's acceptance speech. It's kind of just in my mind's eye. And I remember saying then, I've got to watch this movie. I've never heard of this guy. I have to find out what all the fuss is about, but it looks really interesting. And I just didn't get around to it. But I'm so glad that that Larry, you made the suggestion to look at this film today, because I'm like, oh my goodness, I need that soundtrack. I need to own this movie. I need to, you know, I need to watch it again and again, because it's an amazing story. I mean, nobody could plan this. It's like there was this divine intervention on so many levels with regard to these people getting together at all, and it's just amazing to watch.
Yeah, it is.
I thought so too. It's great. A great film. So now that we've got this great film, we've got this great music, I wonder how people are receiving this particular film in South Africa. I wonder if they're marveling at the film, the documentary itself, and in some cases seeing themselves on film. Because of the concerts, I wonder if they're receiving the movie just as well as they received his music back in the 60s.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said that, because the year that this was released was not the year that it was first seen. It had been making the private showing rounds for a few years before it was released to the public, and that's important. You'll find that when it was released, it was there's a couple of different releases that are important. In July 2012 in the United Kingdom, but it was, I believe, originally released in Sweden. I don't know when it was released in South Africa. I can't find that information at all. It was seen, you know, in a lot of film festivals before anyone knew about this film.
Wow. That's cool. You know, and it's kind of funny. You know, I think documentaries get kind of a bad rap for the most part, because in many cases it's really hard to not just find them, but find the subject matter that you're looking for, and then try to find the documentary that's out there. Now, fortunately for the Academy, they get the opportunity to see a lot of these things are prompted for them, so... it's just sad that not more of us out here who are looking for really quality films get a chance to find these documentaries. We've got to kind of hunt and chase and pick and pack and look under a bushel to find these documentaries. And a lot of this is really good work and really good information, you know.
And you know, there's a couple of good places to start. You know, for instance, to look at what's been nominated for documentaries in the different film awards, whether if it's the Oscars or BAFTA or anywhere else. That's a good place to start. And most people are interested in documentaries that have something to do with their own lives, not necessarily, you know, just to watching documentaries, just to watch documentaries. But a good place to start is to see what's winning the awards, what's catching the attention, because those are usually the stories that are better told. For instance, one that was reviewed a little while ago, The Rubble Kings. Greg, the film that you introduced to us. You know, here is an another outstanding documentary that really brings to everyone a much, much better, a better understanding of all the stuff that happened in the real world, and that story from that same it was made.